Danny scooted off the cot and scooped her up.
Melody says she's a Yorkie.
Not enough meat to even make feeding it worth it.
Danny clutched the dog to her chest.
You wouldn't.
Colt shrugged.
Depends how hungry I get.
Her mouth fell open, and Colt chuckled.
Relax, I won't eat the dog. All that fur would be a real pain to shave off.
Colt stretched out his legs and groaned.
So, if you won't tell me about our friends upstairs, will you at least tell me what you want to do? I'm well enough to hit the road if that's what you want. She turned the question around.
Is that what you want?
A yes perched on his tongue, seconds away from slipping out.
Part of him wanted to dump that dog at Melody's feet, grab his pack, and set off, never looking back.
But Danny meant something. He refused to leave her. Staying gave Danny a warm bed to sleep in every night. Food, water, clean clothes, a chance to make friends and have some normalcy.
It also brought risk. Colonel Jarvis wanted them both dead. They couldn't hide in the Wilkins family's basement forever. At some point, fighting was inevitable. For themselves, the Wilkins, Melody, and everyone else in the town of Eugene.
He scratched at his beard again.
If we stay, it means fighting the army, or whatever's become of it. We can't hide in the basement every time they come down the street. Sooner or later, we will be caught.
Danny pursed her lips, but didn't speak.
Are you prepared to fight those men again? Some of the people here, they won't make it. Hell, none of us might.
Mr. Wilkins would fight.
And what about the rest of them?
Danny shook her head.
I don't know, but they saved us.
Her head dipped low, chin almost brushing her chest. Colt strained to listen.
After we escaped the apartment and hit the road, you collapsed on the street.
She stroked the dog again, hand running down the little thing's back so hard its ears flattened.
I yelled at you, hit you, tried to drag you away, but it didn't work. If Mr. Wilkins hadn't helped get you into the basement, we would both be dead.
She finally looked up, eyes blurry and unfocused.
Colt exhaled.
He knew Harvey offered to keep them safe, but he had no idea how it all went down. That whole day and the ones that followed were muddy and blurry in his mind.
If Harvey hadn't shown up, Danny would have been captured. Colonel Jarvis wouldn't have killed her. He enjoyed inflicting pain too much.
Colt opened his mouth to speak when the scraping of plastic across concrete made him turn.
The door opened, and Harvey stuck his head inside. All clear. You can come out.
Chapter 5. Danny. Wilkins Residence, Eugene, Oregon, 7:30 p.m. The little peas slid around the plate with every push of her fork, leaving slicks of dressing in their wake. Danny couldn't stop thinking about Colt's questions. Did she want to stay or go? Would these people accept her? Did she want them to? How about you, Danny? Did you enjoy school? She blinked Mrs. Wilkins into focus. It was all right. The older woman smiled in encouragement. There had to be something you especially liked. A teacher? A subject? Lunch. Mrs. Wilkins' face froze for a moment before she recovered. That's great. Danny ducked her head and scooped up a bite of the peas before shoving them into her mouth. Maybe they would stop asking questions if her mouth stayed full. It wasn't that she didn't appreciate their hospitality, but all the poking and prodding into her life made her feel like a contestant in a beauty pageant. No way would she smear Vaseline on her teeth to keep smiling. If they didn't like her the way she came, then maybe it wasn't the best place for her. Maybe Colt was right and they should leave. Danny lifted her head. Will slouched in the seat across from her, ignoring everything except the portable game in his lap. Half of his dinner still sat on his plate, untouched. So much food wasted. She nudged his foot under the table. Aren't you going to eat? His eyes flicked up, but he didn't move his head. I'm full. So? I don't want to eat anymore. He broke eye contact and picked up the device in his lap, mumbling as he mashed his thumbs on the controls. Danny glanced at Colt, his elbows perched on the table, and he faced the Wilkinsons. But he was watching. She tilted her head in Will's direction, and Colt eased back in his chair. As Mr. Wilkins finished talking, Colt spoke up.
"Hey, Will, what's that you've got in your lap?"
"A game."
Will still didn't look up.
"Wow, how'd you figure out how to charge it? I would have thought all the fancy computers would be dead by now without the grid."
Will snorted.
"It's a crappy handheld. Works on batteries."
It was a Christmas present a few years back. The product description said over 100 games and it only needed batteries. Mrs. Wilkins' shoulders lifted in excuse. "Leave it to grandparents to pick the wrong thing." Danny's leg bounced up and down involuntarily. She wanted to jump up and scream, shake the kid across from her and tell him to wake up. It wasn't that different than school. So many kids worried about having the latest gadget or the best clothes. It was hard to relate when her biggest worry was hiding from her mother's dealer and finding a way to eat. She reached for Will's plate and pushed it across the table to Colt.
"We shouldn't waste the food."
Colt stopped, napkin in one hand and mouth half open like he'd been about to excuse himself.
"Can't you eat a little bit more, Will? The salad is fresh from the garden."
Mrs. Wilkins' face sagged as Will shook his head. Danny resisted the urge to grab the spoon and force the food down Will's throat. If he didn't want to wake up and face reality, no one could make him. He could starve. Was the rest of Eugene just like him? Were all the kids she went to school with huddled around the last glowing screens, clinging to the world before? She pushed her chair back and stood up.
"I'm not feeling well. Can I be excused?"
"Of course, dear." Mrs. Wilkins smiled at her, and Danny forced her lips to reciprocate. Grabbing her plate and glass, she cleared her dishes before retreating into her temporary room. Danny sat on the bed across from the dead TV and stared at her reflection. The little lantern on the side table distorted her features, turning her into a ghoul from a horror film. Tonight she felt a bit like one, too. After all she and Colt experienced the last week, she couldn't go back to this. Sitting around pretending the old life existed wouldn't keep them fed and warm, or even alive. She shuddered as memories of the soldier in the bathroom flooded her mind. The things he said, the way he touched her. Danny clicked off the lantern and plunged the room into darkness. She remembered how the soldier's blood coated her fingers, how it dripped off her elbows and stained her underwear. He was probably dead by now. But the others weren't. Colonel Jarvis wouldn't forget. Colt almost killed him and the rest of the men in that apartment. He wouldn't let them just blend back into the scenery of Eugene. Tugging her sweatshirt down to cover her hands, Danny thought about her mother. Was she still living it up on campus at the University of Oregon? Did she ever think about Danny and what happened? Did she even care? Danny knew the answers to all of it, but she refused to dwell. Her mother would never change. She would never be kind and generous like Mrs. Wilkins or Gran. She would never love her the way she wanted. She didn't know how long she sat there, staring at nothing, thinking about the past and the ghosts that would haunt her forever. At last, Danny stood up, eyes fully adjusted to the night, and slipped into the hall. Colt deserved an answer to his question, and she was ready to give it to him. The house sat squat and low on the lot, a rectangle with bedrooms on one side and common space on the other. Danny eased past the other bedrooms, one for Will and one for Mr. and Mrs. Wilkins, and found the basement stairs. Avoiding the creaks in the middle, she navigated by feeling down to the lower level of the home. A living room of sorts sat at the base of her stairs, and the room Doug shoved her and Colt into was around the corner.
behind her. Colt's bedroom occupied the opposite corner. Danny flicked on a small flashlight and crept through the living room, avoiding the coffee table with the sharp corners and the pillows stacked up on the floor, and stopped outside Colt's room. She waited for a moment, mustering up the courage to knock. After a mini pep talk, she tapped on the door and waited. Nothing. Is he already asleep? She knocked a bit louder. Colt, it's Danny. She waited some more, chewing on a nail as she bounced back and forth on the balls of her feet. At last, she couldn't stand it and turned the door handle. The door swung open and she ducked her head around the wood, anticipating a sleeping Colt too tired to wake up. She never expected an empty bed. Scanning the room with the flashlight, Danny took in the made bed, the lack of clothes, the missing bag. Did he leave? Did Colt really leave without her? No, he wouldn't. She stepped into the room and spun around, unsure of anything. Was it because she wouldn't answer him? Colt point-blank asked her if she wanted to leave, and she didn't tell him yes. Now she wished she'd screamed it. Yes! Get me out of here and away from this crazy, fake normal that everyone's bought into! If he left her here with Harvey and Gloria and Will, she would go mad. Without him, would they even want her to stay? Panic bubbled up inside, quickening her pulse and forcing shallow breaths to barely expand her lungs. She couldn't go back to being on her own, but she couldn't stay here. Danny sagged onto the bed and clicked the flashlight off. The dark wrapped around her like a blanket, all at once comforting and claustrophobic. Danny didn't know what to do. There were only two options, stay or go. If Colt left, then staying was pointless. But what if he only needed fresh air or wanted to scope out the city? Then he would return. Danny flopped on the bed and shoved her face into his pillow before screaming at the fluffy down. The feathers muffled the noise and she screamed again, beating the mattress with her fists and feet. As she kicked, something fell to the floor beneath her with a massive thud. Danny sat up and wiped tears off her face. Screw being weak. She snuffed back the snot and dropped to the floor before clicking on her flashlight. The light panned across a parcel now separated from the bed. Danny tugged on the sheet used as wrapping and exposed the guns Colt stole from the army before the ambush. Three long rifles and a handgun. One was missing, but that was all. He wouldn't leave them behind permanently, would he? After pulling one rifle out, she carefully wrapped the remaining weapons up and slid them back into place between the metal support posts of the bed. If Colt left, he couldn't have gotten far. With a stab wound in his leg and a gunshot wound to the arm, he would be slow and awkward. I can catch him. Danny jumped up and hustled from the room, almost forgetting to shut the door. If Colt wanted to leave, she would go with him. All she had to do was find him before he disappeared.
Chapter 6 Melody Harper Residence, Eugene, Oregon. 8 p.m. That dog is going to cause us nothing but problems. Doug paced back and forth in the dark kitchen. Every turn of his heel sent a squeal of protest up from the linoleum. Melody glowered at his back and snuggled Lottie a bit closer to her stomach. What was I supposed to do, Doug? Let the soldiers take her? They would have killed her, just like they killed all the other pets in the neighborhood. You don't know that. For all we know, they've quarantined the animals somewhere, and when everything calms down, they'll release them. Her eyes rolled so hard she almost saw her brain. Right. And all those weapons they confiscated are just waiting to be cataloged and given back too. Doug stopped pacing and turned to face her. Without a single light on in the kitchen, all Melody could make out were the whites of his eyes and the contour of his jaw. The moon didn't care to glow much tonight. She stroked Lottie's fur and waited. You really think standing up to them is the right thing? Don't you? What if Harvey's theory isn't true? What if he's wrong about the National Guard? How? Doug closed the gap between them in two strides and tugged a kitchen chair away from the table. He sat on it backward, forearms resting on the back as he focused on Melody. 3 years her senior, he still tried to play parent. They've given us water and food and let us stay in our homes. Thanks to the army, there's no looting on our street. No one's smashing our windows in and taking what we have, or worse. We're safe. We're prisoners. Is that a bad thing? Melody pulled back in shock. You would trade freedom for safety? She couldn't believe her brother. You're the guy who always railed against the Homeowners Association and increased firehouse rules. Now you're content to sit here like a convict because we get to stay in our house and drink some bottled water? Think about it, Mel. He leaned forward, tipping the chair up onto two legs. With the army in charge, you don't have to fight. You'll be safe. She shook her head, black hair slipping from behind her ears before she pulled it back. That's not good enough. I'm not trading Lottie for the army's protection. What happens when they run out of houses to clear? When they want more than just our obedience? That won't happen. You don't know that. Neither do you. A near growl erupted from Melody's throat. Don't you get it? The world's changed. Doug leaned back, and the rear legs of the chair hit the ground with a thud. You've been talking with the Marshal too much. He's filled your head with all this nonsense. Colt has done no such thing. He's a murderer, Melody. For goodness sake, Doug. He's a former Navy SEAL. So he says. You can't seriously doubt the man, can you? He risked everything to save that poor girl. If he hadn't gone to get her, what would have happened to Danielle? She shuddered, thinking about the possibilities. Colt's a good, honest man, who's willing to put his life on the line for people in need. That's a hell of a lot more than I can say for most people. You mean me? Doug stood up in a rush, and the chair wobbled in his wake. 3 weeks later, you're still holding a grudge. Her brother had a point. I don't blame you for losing all the animals at the clinic. But you think I should have tried harder to stop the army? Yes, I do. When the soldiers showed up to clear the veterinary clinic, Melody resisted. But as soon as she got in her brother's car to go home, Doug let them right in. He ran a hand through his hair. I'm not a soldier, Melody. I'm a firefighter. I rescue people from burning buildings and crashed cars. It's not the same thing. Melody exhaled. Fighting was getting them nowhere. I'm sorry. It's just... I feel trapped here. Sure, we're still in our house, and I've got Lottie, but we can't leave. I can't go to work or the store. We can't even sit on the front porch and chat with the neighbors. The army only patrols once in a while. We can still talk to the neighbors. You're at the Wilkinson's place all the time. They're the only people who will let me in. Melody remembered the last time she tried to visit someone else. Last week I almost lost my finger in the Shreveport's front door. Doug snorted. Shelley and Dominic? What happened? I walked over to say hi, see if they needed any help. Shelley opened the door about an inch, made small talk for a minute. Then Dom showed up and shut the door in my face. If I hadn't moved my fingers so fast, I think he'd have broken them. Wow. Doug leaned back against the kitchen counter and crossed his arms. I thought Shelley was one of your best friends. Melody sniffed. Me too. Lottie sat up on Melody's lap, trembling as she alerted on the kitchen door. Someone's here. Doug held the dial of his watch up to the moonlight to check the time. Probably Lucas. I told him to come over after dinner. Melody frowned. Lucas Shaw always had an opinion involving someone else's business. She didn't know what her brother saw in him. Does he have to come tonight? Her brother pushed off the counter. You don't have to stay up. And leave Lucas free to snoop about in the house? She smiled. It's okay. I don't mind. Doug walked over to the kitchen door and peered through the window before unlocking it. Lucas stood on the back porch, hands shoved in his pockets, looking every bit the college employee. Lottie growled soft and low in Melody's lap. She'd always been a good judge of character. As Lucas walked in, Melody smiled but didn't shush her dog. Hi, Lucas. You're out late. He glanced at Doug.
Is it a problem? Should I go?
No, not at all. It's just that it's dark tonight. Not much of a moon, you know? Her brother smiled, and Melody fought the urge to gag. She shouldn't be so hard on Doug's friends. It wasn't Lucas's fault the power grid failed, and his entire existence was turned upside down. Being the social media arm of the University of Oregon's Student Relations Department meant his entire job revolved around a computer screen. Lucas lived for student photographs and trending hashtags about the college. Without his computer or phone, the guy probably cried himself to sleep at night. Melody kept the laugh to herself. Being cruel wouldn't do her any favors. How's your street? Any more inspections? She wished she could call them raids. He shook his head.
Not yet. Most of the walk-ups are empty. We've got a lot of college kids and a few professors. They all left town first thing.
He pulled a hand from his pocket and ran it through his shaggy hair.
It's mostly just me and a couple retired folks who've been there forever. Agnes hasn't left the first floor in 20 years.
Melody nodded. She'd attended a house call with Dr. Benthorne the year before for one of Mrs. Teeple's cats. The poor thing wouldn't eat a single bite. Turned out he had late-stage stomach cancer. Melody pushed the memory aside. She didn't need to think about any more animals dying today. She glanced back at Lucas. Has the army found your parents? Lucas shook his head.
Not yet. I've been tempted to walk to the university campus to ask, but I don't want to ruffle any feathers.
Why would going in person be a problem? Lucas's eyes grew wide.
Haven't you heard? They've instituted a lockdown of the entire campus. No one in, no one out. I can't even get to my office anymore.
What about the cafeteria and all of that? I thought they were letting students who lived off campus come and eat.
Not anymore.
Melody knew about the curfew in her neighborhood and the discouragement of neighborly meetings. But forbidding even employees and students from entering the campus took it to another level. Where are the students? Lucas pinched his lower lip between his fingers in hesitation.
I wouldn't want to speculate.
Doug spoke up. Do you know something?
There were a few still living in the building next to me until yesterday.
And now?
They're gone.
But you said the army hasn't been back. Lucas paused again, his eyes darting back and forth as he scrunched up his nose.
I said there haven't been any more inspections. I don't know if they've been back. For all I know, the kids left in the middle of the night on their own, but...
He trailed off, and Melody almost snapped. She stood up and clutched Lottie to her chest. Tell us, Lucas.
I heard an engine rumbling a street or two away. It sounded like an army truck.
I knew it. Melody turned to her brother. This is exactly what I'm talking about. As soon as the army figures out what to do with us, we'll be next.
We don't know the army is responsible.
Like hell we don't.
Melody eased around the table and brushed past her brother and his friend. I'm getting some air. She stomped up the stairs of their house and headed straight for the little balcony off her bedroom. The nerve of Lucas and her brother. How naive could two grown men be? Didn't they see the danger? Didn't they care? Melody tugged the door open, and a rush of cool night air slapped her face. She sucked in a breath and let it out in a rush, the air taking most of her frustration with her. Clear skies, light breeze. Another beautiful night in Oregon. The moon hung low and half full in the sky, and as Melody eased down into a rocking chair, a few stars blinked into view. 5 minutes of staring at the gorgeous night, and Melody had second thoughts. Maybe her brother was right. Maybe she was overreacting and making something out of nothing. Apart from taking pets, the army had been good to them. Food, water, weekly checks. Everything seemed normal. If she hadn't run into Colt on the street, and Mr. Wilkins hadn't pulled him to safety, she might begin to believe Doug and his Pollyanna theories. But she'd seen Colt's injuries. The bruises across his chest and ribs. The bullet hole in his arm. Danielle's, too. The poor girl lost a good chunk of hair and scalp in the back of her head, and what was left hung in burned tatters before Gloria cut it off. They barely escaped with their lives. No benevolent army treated people that way. Whatever this National Guard unit had planned, it wasn't sanctioned by the United States Army. It couldn't be. She leaned back in the rocking chair and closed her eyes. Somehow, she had to convince Doug fighting was the only option. If only she knew how.
Chapter 7. Colt. Streets of Eugene, Oregon. 11 p.m.
Damn leg. Every time he took a step, the stitches in his thigh tugged and pain shot across his skin.
Melody's work was admirable, but his oversight led to the stab wound to begin with.
If I'd been more careful, if I'd double-tapped that soldier behind the dumpster instead of heading straight for the truck.
He pushed the criticism to the back of his mind. Colt didn't have time to dwell on his mistakes. He needed intel, and he needed it yesterday. Based on his conversation with Harvey, Colt not only memorized a working map of the town, but he knew the areas already secured by the army.
If he wanted to find out their plans for the city and what they had in mind for the residents who didn't resist, hitting the areas not yet secured would be his best option. Keeping to the shadows, Colt skirted the edges of yards and houses, blending in with the darkness as best he could.
If any of the soldiers wore night vision goggles, no concealment would work, but Colt took the risk. The chance this unit possessed a full set of gear was slim. Even as a SEAL, half of their gear would be broken or on back order or missing key parts. It was worse for reservists and National Guard units who only worked part-time. Apart from the basics of uniforms, rifles, and a handful of vehicles, the unit occupying Eugene probably didn't have much. Colt wondered how armed a college town in the middle of Oregon could possibly be. If the army did confiscate all the weapons it located, they might have a tiny arsenal by now. Working his way north, Colt headed farther and farther away from the university and the base camp for the army, and closer to unsecured portions of town. The shift happened gradually. In Harvey and Melody's neighborhood, most of the houses were either empty or occupied with quiet residents who followed directions and stayed inside. Not so out in the fringes of the city. The smell of burned wood and warped plastic assaulted Colt's nose, and he slowed. One house away, a burned-out shell of a structure still gave off heat. The soot-stained tower of a stone chimney loomed in front of him, rising out of piles of charred beams and ashes. Colt stopped beside the wreckage. Did the army burn the house, or did something else cause the destruction? Down the street, more ruined houses lurked, standing one after the other like burned-up stubs of matches in a book. Melody's words from before echoed in his head. The army sent the firefighters home. They must have not only anticipated fires, but welcomed them. Easier to control a resistant group of residents when their houses were nothing more than heaps of worthless charcoal. Colt squinted into the darkness at the houses across the street. Although they were spared, ravages of time without food and water took their toll. Dead grass covered the lawns, some with weeds over a foot tall. A car occupied the front of one house, parked like it ran out of gas on the front lawn, more of a squatter than permanent resident. After checking for any movement on the street or in the windows of the closest houses, Colt hustled across the road. He ducked behind the fender of a late-model Ford and crouch-walked around the front. Broken shards of glass greeted him at the driver's side door, and Colt rose up to check inside. A stain spread across the seat along with fragments of the window, and Colt didn't need a flashlight to know the source. The stale blood reeked of iron and decay, and Colt covered his nose as he stepped back. As tempting as an inspection of the house behind him and the rest of the street might be, it wouldn't serve his purpose tonight. He needed to find an active patrol and assess their current tactics. Were they desperate or still even-handed? Were they shooting on sight or still handling the locals with kid gloves? Colt picked up the pace, ducking past more signs of conflict as he worked his way to the edge of the city. The apartments grew more and more spaced out, replaced by larger houses on larger lots. But the signs of violence remained. Burned-out cars, torn-down fences, toppled stone mailboxes. 3 weeks after the collapse of the grid, and even the nice part of town suffered. He headed toward a street cutting in at an angle when the first sound of another person that night caught his ear. Colt eased into the shadows of a pine tree and waited. The voices filtered through the houses in choppy, incomplete bursts. Men. Harsh tones, followed by laughter. Louder, then softer. Closer, then farther away. He couldn't get a read on them. After pulling his service pistol from his waistband, Colt stepped away from the tree. Weaving through the darkness, he worked toward the voices. Through a backyard, out a side gate, over a low hedge, around a child's playset. The voices grew more distinct as he approached, but still, he couldn't hear. Were they military? Locals out on the prowl? Someone from outside looking for an easy score? The longer the power stayed out, the more desperate people would become. Jarvis's unit might be keeping the peace now, but how long would it last? How long could they keep some semblance of order before a group with even fewer scruples challenged their position? Colt pulled up behind a camellia about the size of an elephant and eased into a crouch among the browning flowers, decaying in heaps on the ground. He closed his eyes and concentrated on the men he could hear but not see. They were close, somewhere to the west of his current position. Outside, by the way their voices carried, maybe a back porch or a driveway? He would need to be cautious. Opening his eyes, he took stock. The houses in his immediate vicinity sat in the middle of large lots of half an acre or more, with landscaped front yards and curtained windows. Not a single light shone in any of them. Colt walked past them all, staying alert, but growing increasingly frustrated. At the end of the block he stopped. A large sign rose out of the ground across from him. Even in the dark, the white block lettering stood out from the background. Rock Mill Homes. New construction, from the high 500s. Colt turned down the street and froze. Instead of sprawling ranches with established yards and large footprints, a clear-cut subdivision opened up in front of him. Curving streets, 100 sewer stubs sticking out of the ground at regular intervals, and a single house smack in the middle. The entire first floor glowed like a lighthouse in the middle of nowhere. Colt rushed into the yard on the corner, hugging the shrubbery as he approached. At the end of the lot, he ducked behind a thick boxwood and exhaled. He'd found the men, and his first hunch was correct. They were army. A desert Humvee sat in the driveway of the house, headlights blasting the sign, "Model Now Open," that hung above the garage. Colt shook his head. Running down the battery of the vehicle just to have some light was beyond stupid. Not only were they blind to the darkness, but they were broadcasting their position to everyone within half a mile. As he watched, the front door swung open, and a pair of soldiers walked onto the porch. Without the noise pollution from cars and air conditioners and a million other electric devices, their voices carried across the breeze.
Give me a light, man.
Don't get your panties in a twist. I'm coming. Colt unclipped a pair of binoculars from his belt and brought the soldiers into focus. Both young, with cropped hair and beardless chins, nondescript, typical National Guardsmen. Their uniforms might need a good pressing and a trip through the laundromat, but other than that, they looked the part. People in a neighborhood like this would respect and listen to them, follow orders. One of the soldiers pulled out a packet from his pocket and plucked out a hand-rolled smoke. He handed it to the other man before flicking the wheel of a lighter with his thumb. Holding the flame up to the end, the soldier lit the paper before pulling back. The other man sucked the smoke into his lungs until his chest puffed out and held his breath. Colt rolled his eyes. Idiots. Before he turned blue, the soldier exhaled and handed the joint to the other man. He mimicked the first's actions, sucking in smoke and holding it until he couldn't stand it another second. He exhaled on a laugh.
I told you, the nicer neighborhoods always have the best shit. Spoiled rich kids know where to score.
Whatever. I just want Jarvis to pay us like he promised so I can get the hell out of here. This place is full of pussies.
And I plan to ride every last one.
The soldier grabbed his junk and grinned.
Meow.
Colt wanted to drop them both where they stood. They were worse than idiots. Cocky assholes and guns were a terrible combination.
Did somebody say meow?
A third soldier walked around the side of the house holding a wriggling sack in his hand.
What's in the bag, Marty?
Marty shoved his hand into the sack and pulled a wriggling cat out by the scruff of its neck, its hair matted in clumps over its sides, but from the blue points on its ears and the matching fur on its paws, it couldn't be astray. Someone paid dearly for that cat, and now it hung by its neck in the hands of a bored young man.
Get that flea bag out of here. You know the orders. Immediate disposal.
Marty shrugged.
I thought we could have a little fun with this one first.
His face contorted into a nasty grin.
Anybody ever seen a cat with a firework attached to its tail?
He pulled a wad of something Colt couldn't see out of his pocket and held it up.
Oh, man, you're one sick bastard.
I know. Now, come on and help me truss this bitch up. I can't wait to set it off.
Colt tensed as the soldiers set to work wrangling the terrified cat. One of them rushed back into the house and emerged seconds later with a roll of duct tape, while the other two held the sack over its face and front paws.
You could take three of them, but what if more lurked inside?
An angled back Humvee fit four, five in a tight squeeze. But that didn't mean anything. More could have been dropped off. Hell, they could be living in the house for all he knew. As much as he wanted to rescue the cat, he couldn't risk it. With all of his wounds, he wasn't operating at 100%. It would be a suicide mission. Colt pulled the binoculars down, unable to watch. He would go back to Harvey's house and regroup, come up with a better plan. As he stood up and turned, a familiar voice trapped his breath in his chest.
Let the cat go! Let him go or I'll shoot!
Day 23. Chapter 8. Danny. Rock Mill Homes, Model House. Eugene, Oregon. 1 a.m. Danny pressed the butt of the rifle tight against her shoulder. No way were those jerks going to light a cat on fire for fun. The soldier holding the duct tape twisted around, laughing as soon as he spotted her. Ooh, look here, boys. It's another animal that wants to play. The rifle dipped, and Danny gritted her teeth to keep it level. Her left arm ached, and her fingers cramped from digging into the front of the magazine well. Stupid weak arms. Colt never looked pained holding one of these. She hoisted it up again, and braced her back foot against the concrete, while she aimed at the man who spoke. "Put the cat down, and I won't shoot," he snickered. "Do you even know how to shoot that, little girl?" Danny twisted to the left and pulled the trigger. The round whizzed past the soldier and drilled into the wood beside his head. She didn't bother to reply. One of the two holding the cat stammered. Hey, maybe we should... Marty screwed up his face, the acne on his cheeks squishing tighter like one giant ball of rage. Shut it, asswipe. She's bluffing. He pointed the roll of tape Danny's way. Put that thing down before you really make me angry. Danny aimed the barrel at center mass, smack on the name tape of Marty's utility shirt. Despite the chill in the night air, sweat beaded across Danny's forehead and down her temples, meandering in slow rivulets down her cheek, before dripping onto her shoulders. The jerks needed to drop the cat before she dropped the gun. She repeated her demand. Let the cat go. How about you give me the rifle and I won't gut you like a fish before I put one between your eyes? Danny swallowed. She came prepared for killing. The minute the bag went over the cat's head, she made her decision. No way were these men going to hurt a defenseless animal just because they could. The world might have gone to hell, everyone she loved might be dead, and she might be signing her death warrant. But Danny wasn't going to watch a cat be tortured. No freaking way. She inhaled slowly through her nose and out her mouth. Her index finger twitched on the trigger. I can do this. All of Colt's training and advice had been about evading and surviving, not shooting first, not cold-blooded murder. But what were they? Each one of the men in front of her were worse than the ones in the apartment, weren't they? She jerked her head up. What are you doing out here anyway? The question caught the soldiers off guard. Marty blinked at her, his face relaxing for a moment. The two holding the cat dropped the bag, and the furball hissed and squirmed. It got a good swipe at one of the soldiers, and he shouted as the cat's claws raked across his bare forearm. His grip on the cat faltered, and it landed on the concrete with another hiss before darting into the dark. "Damn it, Rob, what the hell is wrong with you?" "The bastard scratched me!" Rob pressed his hand over the wound, and droplets of blood oozed between his fingers. "So? It's a cat, for God's sake! Man up, you pansy!" Rob stepped back in shock, his mouth half open as he gawked at Marty. "What the hell's wrong with you anyway? The cat didn't do anything to you." The other soldier stayed silent, head bopping back and forth between Marty and Danny, unsure what to do. His hands still stuck out in front of him, like he held onto the sack, but they were empty. Danny backpedaled two paces. Maybe she didn't have to kill anyone. She lowered the rifle, and relief flooded her arms. Marty noticed. He reached for a handgun in a holster on his belt and tugged it free. "You aren't going anywhere, you little bitch!" Danny hoisted the rifle back up, ignoring the protest in her muscles. "You'll be dead before you pull the trigger." The corner of his lip cocked up in a sneer. "Wanna bet?" Everything slowed. Time. Danny's heartbeat. The squeeze of her finger as she pulled the trigger. She could have been the Flash watching life stand still as she sped through time. The second the round burst from the barrel, everything clicked into place, and the moment ended. The rifle jerked up, Danny staggered back, and Marty stumbled. He yanked his own gun up, wobbling on his feet as his eyes went wide. "You shot me, you fucking bitch!" Shoving his fingers into a new hole in his pants, he jabbed at his thigh. His hand came back covered in blood. "I'm bleeding!" Danny took aim. She would kill him if she had to. Marty hauled his gun back up and focused on Danny. Before he could shoot, the front door slammed open.
"Which one of you idiots is out here shooting? I said no target pra-"
A man stepped out onto the porch wearing a green undershirt, camouflage pants, and shock on his face. He pulled his own service pistol up and aimed it at Danny.
"Drop your weapon." He glanced down at Marty's leg and the stain of dark blood spreading across his thigh. What the hell is going on?
She shot me, sir!
Tell me something I don't know.
He turned to the other soldiers, never once lowering his gun. The quiet one spoke up.
Sergeant O'Reilly instructed us to hold a cat still so he could tape a bundle of firecrackers to its tail, sir.
The older man's chest expanded as he inhaled. That still doesn't answer my question, Davis.
Danny spoke up. I told him to let the cat go. He tried to shoot me instead.
And Sergeant O'Reilly is now standing here staining the concrete because...
I shot first. The soldier nodded, his gray eyes roving over Danny, Marty, and the two other men. From the way the two stood, practically quaking in their boots, Danny pegged the hard-to-read man as their leader. He lowered his gun as his lips thinned into a line.
Hand over your rifle. Go inside and get the first aid kit. You can fix your mess.
Danny blinked. Excuse me? He snorted.
You heard me. Give me the rifle you stole, patch up Sergeant O'Reilly, and we'll call it even.
Marty balked, the gun in his hand swinging in a wide arc.
Sir, she shot me!
And I'll finish the job if you don't shut your trap, Sergeant.
Marty swallowed and lowered his weapon. Danny stated the facts again. He was going to torture a cat. He tried to shoot me.
I don't care if he was auditioning for the title role in a new daytime performance of Phantom of the Opera down at the University Theater.
Nothing made sense. Why was this guy not shooting her or trying to capture her and haul her off to Jarvis? She glowered at Marty. I should have shot him in the chest. The man in charge held out his hand.
Give me the rifle,
Danny jerked back. It's mine.
It's National Guard issue, honey, and you don't look old enough to serve.
Danny's lower lip jutted out before she caught it. I didn't steal it. Not from you, anyway.
Doesn't matter where it came from, it's going back to the Army. Now.
The man reached for the rifle, but Danny brought it back up, pointing it at his chest.
No, it's not.
The unmistakable tone of Colt's voice snapped Danny's head around. He stood, half in the dark, good arm holding a handgun tight. He motioned Danny back with the tip of his head, and she complied, scooting into the shadows to stand alongside him. All of her fear and rage eased. Colt could handle these men. She resisted the urge to smile. Marty would get what he deserved. The man in charge squinted into the gloom.
I'll be damned. Colt Potter, is that you?
Damn straight, Larkin.
Colt lowered his weapon and stepped forward, hand outstretched.
Last I heard, you were knee-deep in bureaucratic bullshit. When did they clear you for duty?
Danny glanced at Colt in alarm. They knew each other? She swallowed down a wave of unease and stood still. Larkin's tense face broke into a smile as he pumped Colt's hand up and down.
About a year after you sweet-talked your way into the air marshals,
he motioned to Marty's bleeding leg.
Davis, you and Stevens handle Sergeant O'Reilly here. The marshal and I have a bit of catching up to do.
He nodded at Danny.
She with you?
Colt glanced at Danny, his eyes unreadable from 10 feet away.
Nah. She's probably just a runaway.
He shrugged like she didn't matter.
How about you let her go? It's not like you need to babysit any more kids around here.
Larkin nodded.
You're damn right about that.
He waved at Danny.
Get out of here, kid, before I change my mind and take you back to my superiors.
Danny didn't know what to do. Why would Colt pretend not to know her? And why would he be friendly with an army guy who worked for Colonel Jarvis? Colt and Larkin walked inside the house, while the two other soldiers tried to help Marty into the house. He shoved them off and limped in by himself, only looking back to glower at her once. A small puddle of blood, thick and half brown, remained on the front step, and Danny stared at it as she backed up.
I need to quit being an ungrateful idiot and get out of here. Whatever Colt's motivations, he had saved her and the rifle. She spun around and slung the rifle over her shoulder before loping off into the darkness of the night. If Colt wanted to hang out with a bunch of soldiers who would kill him if they knew Jarvis ordered it, fine. She didn't plan on sticking around until they figured it out. He could have his boy's night. She had a cat to find.
Chapter 9. Colt. Rockmill Homes Model House, Eugene, Oregon, 2 a.m. Colt eased down into a chair at the kitchen table while Larkin popped open a couple of beers. He leaned back and gave Larkin a bit of hell. So, how did a gimp-ass major end up in the National Guard? Thought they didn't let assholes with broken backs stay on active duty. Larkin laughed and handed over a beer. It tastes like warm piss, but it's the best we've got. He eased into the chair opposite Colt, and the lines around his mouth deepened with effort. Turns out a couple of fused vertebrae don't matter to the guard. After all that rehab at Walter Reed, I was cleared for non-combat duty. He drank a few gulps of beer. Guess they forget those restrictions when the world goes tits up. Colt remembered the grueling rehab. He'd never seen so many grown men cry. Men who'd killed, men who'd fought alongside him as a SEAL, all reduced to tears because of some simple exercises. Walter Reed taught a man humility. He met Major James Larkin a couple of weeks into his stay. The man had broken his back in three places, falling from a Black Hawk. When he was transferred to the rehab floor, he'd been a few weeks post-op, and weaker than a granny with a heart condition. By the time Colt left 6 months later, Larkin still collapsed after a few steps. Colt couldn't help but ask, "How long were you there after I left?" "At Reed? A year at least. But it was worth it. Got my legs working and met my share of hot physical therapists." He grinned. "Something about the back injury. They all loved me." Colt shook his head and took a swig of the beer. He choked it down. "You're right. This shit's terrible." He read the label. Leave it to some overpriced home builder to only stock microbrewery crap. Larkin nodded in agreement. "Right? Stupid idiots. I told my men to find some Budweiser, but no luck so far. Can you believe college kids here don't drink the cheap stuff? It's all local breweries and imported garbage." "Speaking of, where are all the students? Haven't seen any around." Larkin shrugged. "The colonel drove them all out of town, from what I've heard. Told them to get lost or get to work. Most of them chose to leave." "Huh." Colt took another sip of nasty beer. So far, Larkin didn't seem concerned about his presence, but Colt needed to test the waters. If Larkin heard about his exploits, then the longer he sat in his swank little camp, the more dangerous it became. "You said there's a colonel in charge? Isn't a little National Guard unit below his pay grade?" His old rehab buddy leaned back in his chair. "You'd think so, but Jarvis took this one on personally for some reason. After we got official orders to retreat from Portland, I came here with a few of my men. The rest scattered. We're only now getting integrated into the unit." Colt nodded. Now it made sense why they were out in a model home away from the college campus. Jarvis hadn't decided whether he could trust them. He drank some more beer as he glanced around. From what he can tell, Larkin had three guys with him, one now injured thanks to Danny. As soon as he made it back to Harvey's house, he would confront her about what the hell she was doing wandering so far from home in the middle of the night. But he couldn't dwell on Danny now. "What's Jarvis's story?" "Don't know, really. I heard he's the deputy commander of the BCT. Don't know much else." Larkin pointed his bottle at Colt. "If you aren't helping the unit here, what are you doing? Thought you were out of Sacramento these days."
"I was, until the damn lights went out halfway to Seattle."
Larkin almost spit out his beer.
"No shit. You were up in the air?"
"Yep. Watched the whole thing. We emergency landed just north of Eugene. I walked down here, got all the passengers situated, and I've been trying to figure out what to do ever since."
"Is that how you got hurt?"
Larkin pointed to Colt's bandaged arm.
Nah, that was a run-in with some idiots a few days back.
Do they look worse than you?
Colt grinned. Much.
Larkin smiled back.
Good.
He drained the rest of his beer and stood up.
I'm sure the guard could use a guy like you.
Colt's face fell, but Larkin didn't see it.
I'm not much of a rule follower anymore.
He straightened up in the chair.
I'd rather be on my own.
Larkin nodded as he dug two more beers out of a carton on the floor.
I hear you.
Colt pushed him a bit.
I'm surprised you're willing to take orders. Aren't you used to handing them out now?
I don't mind. So far, we haven't been asked to do much.
Colt drained the rest of his beer as Larkin walked back over and handed him a new one.
What if you don't like what Jarvis is up to? From what I've seen, he can be a real pain in the ass.
Larkin shrugged.
Somebody's got to be the bad guy, doesn't he? At least this time it won't be me.
Are you sure about that?
I won't do anything I don't want to. If Jarvis thinks I'm going to be a puppet, he'll learn soon enough that's not the case.
Colt wasn't about to tell the guy it wouldn't be that easy. If Larkin wasn't willing to break from the colonel now, he couldn't tip his hand. They might have bonded in their time at Walter Reed, but Colt didn't trust Larkin enough to expose his value to Jarvis. If Larkin brought Colt in, he'd be able to write his own ticket in Jarvis's crew. Colt couldn't risk it. He played it off.
You're a better man than me. At this point, I'd rather just be on my own.
So you don't know that kid?
Who, the scrawny thing with the bad attitude?
Larkin nodded.
Nah, I never saw that little shit before tonight.
I'm surprised she knew how to handle a rifle. Kids these days usually only know how to work a phone.
Damn right about that. You should have seen the passengers when they got off the plane.
Instead of being thankful to be alive, so many were furious their calls wouldn't go through and the lights weren't on. Larkin launched into a spiel about boot-enlisted guys in his unit these days, and Colt only half-listened. From what he could gather, Larkin didn't know anything about Colt's run-in with Jarvis or the operation here in Eugene. Colt planned to stay around until morning, reminiscing and attempting to get any additional information out of the guy. But after that, he could write Larkin and his little band of idiots off. They wouldn't help him defeat Jarvis or turn him in, which made them a distraction at best. But Colt was overdue for some friendly company, and the bad booze didn't hurt.
So tell me about Portland. If you all left, it's got to be bad.
Horrible is more like it. It's chaos, complete and utter chaos.
Colt relaxed into his chair as Larkin got on a roll, telling him all about the National Guard's involvement in the bigger cities. A few more hours of this, and he'd take his leave, hopefully with one of the rifles he'd seen just lying around. At some point, once his old friend found out what Jarvis really intended for the little town of Eugene, Oregon, maybe Colt could convince him to switch sides. Until then, he opted to abide by the old, trusty adage, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. He smiled as Larkin took a breath.
Sounds like you're a damn hero.
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but I admit I've done some good work these last few weeks. Feels good to get out from behind a desk. That's for damn sure.
Colt nodded and drank some more beer.
Sooner or later, Larkin would have to make a choice.
He hoped it would be the right one.
Chapter 10. Danny. Streets of Eugene, Oregon. 5 a.m. Exhaustion tugged at Danny's eyelids, but she propped them open enough to keep moving. The cat had been one elusive pain in the neck since she rescued him from those thugs. If the stinking thing didn't have a wad of duct tape still attached to its tail, she would have given up hours ago. At least chasing it kept her mind off of Colt and whatever he was doing with the army jerks back at the house. She didn't even know he was in the area. She'd just been drawn by the sound and the light. After spending a couple of hours searching for Colt with no luck, the model house was too tempting not to check out. She never expected to shoot a man or watch Colt walk inside almost arm in arm with the soldier in charge. He wanted to hang out and play Macho Man for a night? Screw him. Danny would be fine on her own, even if she didn't catch the cat. Half teasing, half tormenting her,
The cat always stayed a few feet out of reach. Danny had tried everything. Whispering, rubbing her fingers together while she held them out, sneaking up on it, staying still in hopes it would